evening, everyone. It's Devara Krasniansky here at Adayad. Adayad was formed for a successful marriage, and to that end, we have lots of resources for pre-dating, dating, engagement, early marriage, and beyond. You can check us out at Adayad, adaiad.org, and there you can find more about our courses and our conference calls, our coaching. And we also have a daily WhatsApp with marriage tips, which is very valuable. And you can get that on our website as well. Tonight's call is with Rabbi Chase Taub about for husbands, Corona and your marriage. And while we've been addressing many aspects of relationships in this Corona crisis, tonight's talk is specifically for husbands. That means it's not for wives. And if wives are listening, it's really not for you. So we'll just get started.
What is going on for husbands that may be different for wives? What is going on? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay, fine. So you said what's going on for husbands is different for wives. So I'm going to answer the question as you asked it. So men have to know that the hardest part of the current situation as a husband, as a man, is that it's always stressful to be a guest, right? It's more stressful. Which is more stressful, to be a host or to be a guest? You know, it can be tiring to be a host because you have to take care of the guests, but it's always tiring to be a guest because, you know, you're on the foreign ground, you know, you're not your own element, and you have to sort of be on guard. It's harder work to be a host than to be a guest. But being a guest is tiring because you're on somebody else's home turf and you have to be on your best behavior. And, you know, let's not forget that a woman is not just the mainstay of the home, but she is synonymous with the home. So we are guests. I don't mean this facetiously and I don't mean it cynically. I mean in a sincere way that we are guests in our wives' homes. And there's different etiquette for a host than for a guest. So you began by asking, what do the men specifically need to know? You know, it's very different than what the women need to know. So I was speaking to women. I don't want to say too much what I would say to the women because, you know, you have to be careful. Whenever you tell the wives what you told the husbands, or vice versa, you tell the husbands what you told the wives, some people, some unscrupulous people weaponize it, and then they use it against their spouse, and they say, hey, the rabbi said you're supposed to, okay. And it's not for us to worry about what the other person is supposed to be doing. It's about us to work on what we can control, which is our own behaviors, what we're supposed to be doing. But if I were speaking to the wives, you know, I would be speaking about the fact that her role of being a keres habayis and creating an environment is more important than ever because everyone is at home. And so therefore, you know, it's time to step up in that regard, is just to really create an environment that's warm and inviting. But again, I don't want to speak too much about that because then people are going to have complaints against, is my wife really making such a warm, inviting environment? If only she would make a warm, inviting environment, then I would do what I have. Okay, let's not go that way. Let's not go down that avenue. But if we're the husband, so we have a different role. Our role is to be a good guest. What does it mean to be a good guest? It means, if you're, what is a good house guest? Somebody who disrupts as little as possible while contributing as much positive energy as possible. It's a delicate balance. It's almost a contradiction in terms. You don't want to disrupt, right? You're the guest. So you don't want to change the whole tone. What's going on? On the other hand, what's a good guest? Somebody who brings something contributes something, brings something to the table. Okay, let me spell this out. What does this really mean? It means like this. Your wife has a system for how the house runs. Even when it looks like she doesn't have a system, trust me, she has a system. Just like we have a system, like we know when the pair of pants that we put on the chair, how many days we can put it there before it needs to go into, you know, the bag that goes to the dry cleaners, and if somebody moves it, we get irritated because we have a system for it. No, it wasn't dirty. There's a system, right? Okay, so we have a system for that kind of stuff, right? So she has a system. Everything's a system for everything. So we have to be respectful of that. To not start making big changes in how the house runs. Go with that flow. But then, here's the contradictory part. At the same time that you're practicing this enormous self-control of not inserting yourself into things and overstepping your bounds and changing the tone that's already been established, at the same time you do that, I know this is the paradox of it. You have to step up, and you have to be a source of positive energy. To do one or the other is very easy. To not disrupt, that's very easy. You find a corner to go hide in. You don't talk to anyone. You don't look at anyone. They don't look at you. And you don't disrupt. That's easy. Conversely, to contribute emotional energy into the home, that's also easy. You just insert yourself into every situation, and you have your ideas how everything should be done, and then you change the way things have been done. The art is recognize that the way things are done in the home. Recognize that your wife, for whatever calculations she has, how she came to determine that this is the way that things work best, to just accept that. That's the way things are. And then to try to give as much positive energy into the system that already exists. So, for instance, let me just give a corona social distancing quarantine scenario for 2020. There might be some aspect of day-to-day living that a husband didn't used to be part of, or he wasn't even present for, okay? Like, for instance, let's say something that's totally new for most families, getting the kids all set up with their online learning in the morning. That's a whole new experience. She's got a system for that. What can we do? Be quiet for a minute, be still, look at how things are set up. And now within this system that exists already, insert positive energy. That means offer to be helpful. Obviously, always offer to be helpful. But offering to be helpful in a way that is going with the grain, with the flow, not innovating, not, I know we have good ideas. We like to suggest things being different. We come up with, you know, solutions for problems that we're identifying. In this high-pressure situation that we're in right now, we don't want to do that. We don't want to be creative. We don't want to come up with new ideas or suggestions. What we want to do is see how things are running right now, how they're already running, and try to give positive support, positive energy. That means lend a hand, be helpful with a smile. That means to be very validating, positive, making positive comments to your wife, to your kids, praising everybody. Oh, it's so nice. I see you. You're sitting at your place. You're ready for school. Oh, I see that you have, you know, you praise the children. I see that you threw away your cereal bowl after you had breakfast. That's the kind of thing that we want to do. We want to just see what's going on already, realize your wife has a job. She is the home. She's running a home. You're a guest in that home. The best thing you can do is, I don't want to belabor a point, but I'm saying, I'll say it one more time. Observe. Be an observer. what system or systems are already in place that's keeping the house functional. And now just support that. Go with that flow, with that grain, and wives will feel supported. They will feel, you know, the geese, when the geese fly to Florida for the winter. You know, do you ever see them flying in the air? They fly in formation. But they actually rotate. They rotate when they fly. Why do they rotate? Because you're flying all the way to Florida, you get tired. So what do? When you get tired of flying, you go to the back of the formation, and the wind current from the geese flapping their wings at the front of the current, the wind current flies back, and the goose in the back of the formation sort of floats on that wind current. That's what we want to do. And be in formation. Don't break ranks. Don't disrupt. And when you flap your wings, you're creating an air current. It just makes it easier. Everything goes easier. That's the goal. Just put in positive energy within the systems that are already functioning in the house, and it just makes it easier and less tiring for your wife. And of course, when we can do that, then all around better for everyone in the home. So it's a better environment, less stress, less strain. That's the main thing that we're trying to accomplish right now. Just trying to keep everyone feeling supported. We don't want people feeling burnt out. Burnout is really, you know, in a compressed situation like this where everyone's on top of each other. We want to avoid burnout. We want to avoid exhaustion. So for a husband, this is the way that you can provide support in a way that will not be disruptive. I know, I'm going to repeat again. I don't want to belabor the point, but a lot of times as husbands, we feel shocked or disappointed that the help that we offer not only isn't accepted, but sometimes, you know, they say no good deed goes unpunished. We try to be helpful and we end up getting criticized for it. And we forget. Sometimes the reason that we get criticized for being helpful, even though our intentions were good, is because we overstepped our bounds as guests. I'm using that term decidedly, you know, that the home is the woman's place. She sets the tone. And so we felt we've been helpful. Really what we're doing is we're being disruptive. We're changing the system. And that, you know, like the geese flying in formation, to continue with that muscle, there's a reason they fly in that formation. That's the formation that works. Don't be a chacham. Don't suggest another formation. So I'm just saying, for us to save our own feelings, that we don't end up getting disappointed or hurt because we were trying to be helpful. I was only trying to be helpful. And then, you know, we get criticized. We don't even know why we're being criticized. I'm saying a way to avoid 90% of those scenarios for a husband is just be quiet, be still, be an observer. Look what's going on. Try to figure out what's happening, when it happens, how it happens. Don't try to add too much to it. I mean, innovate. Don't try to make any new chidushim. And just be supportive within that system. I know this sounds very, very, very simple. Maybe it even sounds too simple. But simple things are often essential, and simple things are often overlooked.
Okay. Rabbi, I just want to throw in there as well, is now that you actually see how much work it takes to run a family, it gives you a new perspective of what your wife is doing, and you have a new opportunity to see what happens during the day and during morning rush, et cetera, et cetera. I just wanted to throw that there on behalf of all wives.
That's the old joke, that the guy comes home from work and he sees the kids, you know, running around sees the toddler running around in his diaper on the front lawn. He comes inside, and he sees the whole toy chest is turned over, and he comes in the kitchen, and there's dirty dishes in the sink, and then, and then he says, what in the world happened here today? And she says, you know, when you ask me every day, you come home from work and you ask me, what did I do today? Well, today I didn't do it. Today I didn't do it. Now you see, okay. So it's very easy to overlook the work that goes into keeping things functional, because you don't notice when things are functional. When things are normal, you don't notice. But yes, 100%, it's an opportunity for men to maybe if we're good observers, to start to realize, wow, you know, it takes that much work and thought and attention and focus to run a home. You know, the Hayengim says to think about the chinuch of our children a half an hour a day. I don't know if many mothers really have to stretch to cover that, you know, to meet that quota. But, you know, it's more of a man's instruction to have to take time, spend a half an hour a day thinking about raising the children. But, yeah, absolutely. And let me just add that if it adds to our appreciation for our wives, that's a great thing, too. That's a great thing, too, because appreciation, a sincere compliment, where you actually value what somebody is doing, is a way that people bond. That's a way that people bond. How do you get closer to somebody? Is, you know, Avas Yisrael means you love every Jew. They don't have to have any mitzvahs, you know. Or you have sabriyas, you just can love them because Hashem created them. There are levels. And a higher level is where you have a unique appreciation for somebody, where you see what they do and how it's special, and you respect it and you admire it and you envy it. Maybe you concede that you couldn't do it. That's when people forge, and that's one way. There are other ways as well, but that's one way to forge a bond, is just to, you know, become a little bit impressed with what your wife's role in running the home is, and just that appreciation, just even having that recognition internally for yourself, will bring you closer to her, which ultimately is only going to make the home more peaceful, more relaxed, more warm, etc.
Okay, this question came in. I want to protect my wife from. I'm just going to add a little bit more to it. His fear is like he's afraid he will lose his job or he lost his job. And I'm just going to turn the question around a little bit. What are some things to consider as you determine, or as the husband determines, the balance between being the support and sharing the fears and also needing support? What things to think about?
Yeah. So I'm going to be very sexist here, and I'm going to insist on some traditional gender roles. And that doesn't mean that there aren't fathers who get their kids dressed in the morning, and it doesn't mean that there aren't women who go out and work and make money, or even make more money than their husbands. Okay? I understand that. However, there are certain gender roles that there's nothing we can do to offset them. They are existential truths. They are just the way that Hashem made the world. From the time of Adam and Chava, this was the situation, that life's been difficult. Ever since the Chet Eitz Hadas, life's been difficult. How is it difficult? For women, the difficulty is generally the difficulty of raising children. And for men, that difficulty is making a living. Like, again, it doesn't mean that a man doesn't also raise his children. And there are some husbands, fathers, who are more into the child rearing than the wife. and vice versa, there are women who do more in working outside of the home than the husband. However, what it does mean is there's something hardwired within us, our psychology, our makeup, the way Hashem made us, that we identify with these things more deeply. In other words, I'm speaking to the husband, so let me focus on the husband. The fact that since the Chet Eitz Hadas, a man was, I don't want to use the word cursed, but a man was given this challenge of the Zeyas Haponim Toichel Lechem, that you're going to eat bread by the sweat of your brow, meaning you're going to have to toil, you have to work to make a living. What does that mean? That means that a man, generally speaking, could be exceptions, but generally speaking, is going to feel much more of a connection. He's going to identify much more with success or failure in making a living than a woman will. What does that mean? It means we have to know. We have to know. The way we look at our own success or failure or struggles in Parnassa is essentially different than how your wife looks at it. A man, again, you can tell me there's exceptions. Yeah. Of course there are exceptions, but we're speaking about the rule. A man doesn't just look at making a living as making a living. We identify with it. To a large extent, we decide for ourselves our own value and worth as a person based on it. So when we have challenges in that area, it's not just the stress of not being able to pay the credit card bill. It's that stress plus the stress of wondering about our own value as a person. So here's to answer your question. Here's what I think needs to be taken into consideration. If you're sharing with your wife about, let's say, the scenario, and the question was, he's out of a job, or he's about to be out of a job, or he's worried he's going to be out of a job, here's the thing. You have to realize that a lot of your feelings about this situation are feelings that your wife probably can't relate to and shouldn't relate to. It's a different reality. Now, there are certain things that she could relate to, like, for instance, not having the money to buy what you need to buy, okay? So that's a shared stress, and that's something you might talk with each other about, especially because you have to make some decisions. You may have to make some decisions, and you want to coordinate with her. But when you as a husband have to be clear about there are certain feelings you may be having, for instance, your insecurities, about being a breadwinner, that really she can't help you with. She can't help you with that. You're speaking a different language. It's a different reality. It's a different experience of life. And for that, we have friends. And we have Mashpiyim. We just had Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph. Sei lecha rav, kneh lecha chaver. You have to have a good Mashpiyim. You have to have some good friends, and you talk with them. Don't try to get support for something where explaining what it is that you need support for in and of itself is a whole malacha. I don't want to make rules and tell people they shouldn't do it. What I'm saying is, as a guideline, there are probably better ways of bonding, and there's probably better ways of connecting and talking about whatever's going on in your life than for a man to speak to a woman about things that she doesn't necessarily relate to. So just for the sake of bonding in a more efficient way, in a way that's more likely to succeed, what I would say is this. Be cognizant, be aware how much of this is a conversation that she can have, meaning this affects her as well, she's involved in this as well, and how much of this is subjectively my personal thing, you know, something that I have to work through on my own or with my own support system that I have in my life. And I think if you can make that distinction between the two types of stress that you're feeling about one thing in your life, that you'll end up being much more successful in getting the support that you need.
I want to have to add to that question, though, about withholding such information, like not having a job. Is that helpful, or what to consider in that from that aspect?
So, obviously, anything that's practically relevant has to be discussed. So if we're not going to be able to spend money, you have to tell her. If we're spending money we don't have, you probably should tell her. But if it's about, you know, the emotional side of it, that's a different discussion. I guess you're talking about keeping it secret. I mean, is that the question? Not telling her at all, not letting her know.
Not telling her at all, going out for a loan rather than telling her that you lost your job. So eventually that loan is a joint loan. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I would say when it comes to practical things, you're a partner. You tell your wife. You tell your wife these things. What the husband, I'll put it this way, there's something he's doing right, which is instinctively, he understands. You don't have to involve your wife so deeply in it. And that's true. But where would I draw that line? Probably, you know, what I was saying before about a man has certain feelings about making a living that probably could talk about that better with a friend. So this questioner is probably instinctively, you know, guarding that from his wife. And that's probably a good thing in that respect. But then it sounds like to me going a little too far, because he's withholding information from her that's practical information. It's just very practical. In other words, it doesn't have to be so emotionally charged. It's a practical thing. You know, it's like if there are high winds in the area and there's going to be electrical outages or a high chance of electrical outages tonight, and it stresses you out. So I don't want to tell my wife there's going to be an electrical. What do you mean? You have to tell her. You have to tell her there's going to be electrical outage. Okay? So I think if you can divorce yourself from the emotional aspect of it, I mean, just take out the practical, the practical ramifications that emerge from the situation, like I'm taking out a loan. You know, that's a practical. That's a fact. It's a piece of information that you should be able to share. I would suspect, you know, maybe that there's a lot of intertwined or like intermingling of the facts of the situation and the emotions. And so in order to not dump those emotions on his wife, he's just keeping the whole thing from her. And I don't think that's the way to do it. Separate the facts from the feelings, share with her the facts, and go to your friend, the MSP, to process your feelings. Does that make sense?
It does, but on the other hand, choosing to take a loan without discussing the loan, maybe she has ideas of cutting back, but like, it feels like it's also something he took on without being a partner.
Saying. That's what I'm saying. Discuss the facts with her.
Okay. And she can be part of the decision-making process as well, not just, this is what I am doing.
Sure, but now I'm going to flip things a little bit. Just like I said before, and I'm admitting to being unabashedly sexist here. I understand these are traditional gender roles, okay? But just like I was saying before, a man has to know that he's a guest in his wife's home, and don't disrupt the system, the Seder that she has for keeping the home life running smoothly. Ultimately, a husband's the one, the buck stops here, as they say, who has to take responsibility for Parnassa. So while it's probably the respectful thing to talk it over, not just respectful, the wise thing, Chachamim say that Chava was taken from Adam, from the Tzela, from Hatzela. Means the side, his feminine side, was extracted from him and turned into to his wife. But Al Pidush, they say that Hatzela is Asius Le'etza, which means that you should ask your wife advice. Le'etza, you should get Eitza from your wife. So it's probably not only the respectful thing, but like the smart thing to discuss it with her. However, at the end of the day, it's more of the man's call regarding, you know, something like this about making money and, taking out a loan or cutting expenses or whatever it is. That's probably more of his call to make. And the ideal situation would be just like he gives her space to do her role, that she's giving him space to do his. And by the way, let me just add, when do people get secretive and put up walls and really unnecessarily thick boundaries? You know when they do that? When they're afraid of being violated. But when you feel safe with somebody, when you feel respected, when you feel that they are giving you enough autonomy to make choices for yourself and not be smothered, not be overwhelmed by them, then people tend to be more open. So what I'm saying is that if everyone gives each other space and is respectful of each other's decisions and acknowledges also these divisions, these roles, then there's a lot less instinctive need to hide things from each other and to, to put up overly thick boundaries. When you know that the other person is going to give you space to make the decision that you're comfortable with making and not having to feel like you have to desperately defend yourself to get permission to do what you think you need to do, when you don't feel that desperation, then you're a lot more open. So we don't control how other people treat us, but in an ideal situation where there's respect for the other person's role and not stepping on the other person's toes, then there's also going to be a lot more, there should be proportionately more openness where you can be very transparent about what's going on.
Okay. Another question is, my wife doesn't want physical intimacy. She says she's so tired, and I definitely understand it, but it would so help me to connect with her and also to release some stress. What can I say or do to get her more in the mood?
Wow, that's a tough question. That's a real question.
Should I take it back?
No, that's a real question. I'm sure that other people, more than just the person who wrote the question, have the question. See, this teaches us about my
feelings. Can you add a little bit more to the question?
Yeah.
And maybe I'll just lump it all together. Yeah. The whole going to the mikvah, being afraid of the, the whole coronavirus and the mikvah, some people are choosing not to go or making it, really overthinking it. So I just want to throw in whether she is Nida, extended Nida, or she is not Nida, two different aspects of the same question.
Right. Okay. So no, those are actually not two different aspects of the question. I would say they're two totally different questions.
And
I'm happy to answer both, but they're two totally different questions. Okay. Because question about mikveh is a very simple halachic question. We as Jews, we live our lives based on Torah's directives, Torah Meloshim Hera, like the Rebbe said thousands of times. So Torah doesn't just mean the parsha from the week, or putting a dairy spoon in a meat pot. Torah means every aspect of life, including what to do during the coronavirus outbreak in 2020. So it's very simple. A question about mikveh, no mikveh, that's a shaila for a rav. And the same rabbanim who either would have told us yes mignonim or no mignonim. So they said no mignonim. Okay. So there are some people who are really bummed out about that. They're very disappointed. They want the mignonim. There's other people, it's easier for them to live with it. But at the end of the day, the rabbanim say no mignonim. Okay, no mignonim. Fine. The same rule, you ask. Mikvah, no mikvah. It's a very simple question, and we don't have to overly complicate it. And if they say no, then no. And you live with it. If they say yes, then you're okay, then do it. And have full confidence that it's okay to do, and that you're not being reckless by going, if a Rav says you should go, and you're not being irresponsible, even if you think in your mind that that's a more responsible thing, is to minimize going out, so I'm not going to go out for this. We live our lives according to halacha. We live our lives according to Torah. So this is a simple shaila. And the main thing is getting ourselves focused on looking at things from the perspective of the Nefesh HaLakis, not the Nefesh HaBamas. Nefesh HaBamas is going to be reactive. It's going to look at the world. It's going to look at Teva. It's going to make calculations based on, you know, reacting to people, places, and things, and that, you know, that type of, you know, fight or flight response. Nefesh HaLakis is whatever Torah tells me. So I don't think that should be a complicated thing. And
I want to add another kink into that question, though.
Yeah.
I mean, the wife doesn't want to ask the Rav. She just doesn't want to go because she's so afraid, whether it's reasonable or fear or whatever. This is her fear, so she's not even asking. I mean, the husband could ask the question, but ultimately she has to go. And I think that's part of the complexity here.
So you're asking, then you have to be specific what the question is. Then what you're saying is she already made up her mind. She's not asking a shaila because she doesn't want to be told it's okay because she's afraid. And now right. The question is being asked by a husband who's saying, my wife made up her mind already. She decided to not decide. She's not asking. By not asking, you're making a decision. If you ask, they may say yes, they may say no. If you don't ask, then for sure it's as if it's a no. And so she's not going. So now the question is from my husband who says, my wife's not asking, she's not going, and now what am I supposed to do? Is that what we're saying? Let's be clear.
I want to put that out because, you know, you're saying yes, ask, but what if she doesn't want to ask? I just want to put out the different scenarios that are possible in this area.
Okay. And again, the halacha deals with this. Halacha deals with this. And I want to be a little bit careful here because we're speaking about personal issues that really, Chazal tell us, should only be discussed in small groups, you know, with just a couple of students. So this is not like a chassin class, and I'm not. I want to be very guarded, especially if the call is recorded, and then it's with, you know, and all sorts of people hear it, and then. Because I'll tell us the reason why you don't speak about these matters in large groups is very simple. Because if you're talking to an individual, then you know that the individual is hearing you and they're hearing what they're supposed to be hearing. Once you're talking to a large group, there's no control over what people hear, and they end up hearing what they want to hear, and they don't necessarily hear what you said. And because I'll say, because people's hearts are very invested in this area, so there's a lot of bias going into it. It sort of distorts our ability to hear things clearly. So I want to be very careful. I'm going to try to be as specific as I can be, but I do have to exercise some degree of restraint here to not get too specific, because this is something really you have to discuss directly with your Rav. But let me see how much of it I can talk about that's general, that would be generally applicable.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go a little bit slowly because I'm just, you know, I want to back away before I walk over the edge.
Okay, I'm sorry. This is a question on people's minds.
This is good. This is good. This is what this is for. That's why we have the anonymous question email. Okay. Part of being a husband, part of the reality of being a husband, is that certain desires, which, you know, Hashem implanted in the human being, which are very strong desires, are not going to be met the way that you want them to be met all the time. I think one of the big disappointments that Bachram have is that basically they think there's this area of life you have to completely shut out, you know, you have no outlet for it. But then when you get married, all of a sudden now, you know, it's like having, you know, somebody who wants to eat, and he gets up, you know, he has a 24-hour restaurant in his house, and just you can get up at 3 in the morning and go sit down, and they'll serve him a steak. I don't want to sound grub, but I think the whole misunderstanding or the impression that a lot of Jungleite have and continue to have, not just in early marriage, but bring with them throughout the years, is this misunderstanding that somehow now that they're married, there's this access. And that's just not the reality. It's not the reality at all. And just like when you're a bachur, you have to exercise extreme self-control in this area, so too when you're a jungleman, in fact, even more control, because we all know that it's easier to not eat at all than to eat a little bit and stop. It's much easier to have something completely not part of your life than to have it in your life and to exercise self-control. But this is something, this is part of being a husband, this is part of being a man, is to understand. Yes, I heard the question. The question was, he wants this. Not only he wants this, that getting this situation, it would be so helpful, and it would, you know, it would create, what do you say, would relieve stress. Okay, I hear you. I hear. And nobody's saying that in theory that's not true. But in practice, that may not be available. That may not be the reality. So let's say it is a situation where she's decided not to ask a shiloh. She's afraid. She's not going. Okay, so what are you supposed to do? Let's play through the scenarios. Go ahead. You know, what can you do? So one is maybe he'll call. He'll ask the shiloh for her. Okay, would that be a smart idea? She already decided she doesn't want to call. Now, maybe she would say to him, I'm embarrassed to call. Would you call for me? You know, okay, that's a different situation. No. She didn't call because she doesn't want to be told that she can go, because she doesn't want to go. She's afraid. So what should he do? Should he try to convince her? Would that bring them closer? Would that alleviate stress in the home? Should he beg her? Come on, do me a favor. Do it for me. Would that make her respect him more? Would that bring them closer together? Sometimes a husband just has to make a calculated decision that there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do. Now, if it goes by 1 month, another month, okay, there's halachas for that. So halachas, it goes by 12 months, and then there's a whole siman and shulchan aruch that deals with that. And then it depends why she's not going. And then depending on the reason, there's very different outcomes, and we're not going to get into that, and that's to be discussed with the Beis Din. But talking about a one-time thing, or even a two-time thing, or something that's because of an exceptional situation like we're in right now, part of the reality of being a husband is realizing that, you know what? Yeah, maybe in theory it'd be really nice to have this available, but it's not. But it's not. I don't mean to sound flippant or cavalier about it, or to be dismissive of people's feelings. I understand the feelings here are very, very strong. I will also add that I'm not just talking about taiva. I'm not accusing husbands of being grub. I understand that the feelings are strong, not just on a level of taiva, but also on an emotional level. There is a strong desire to bond. I understand that. I understand also, this is also part of the Chet Eitz Hadas, that our hargoshes atzmi, our self-concept and our self-esteem, men and women, our self-esteem is very, very connected to the health of that area of our lives. And that when there's frustration in that area, I understand that can hit a person on a very deep level. So I'm not minimizing it. I'm not saying it's no big deal. I'm not saying, you know, shrug it off and just, you know, ignore it. What I am saying is, you know what? This is what it means to be a Yid. This is it. It means to be able to have enough self-respect, self-control, enough of a spiritual perspective on life to be able to deal with this kind of challenge. And make no mistake, this is a regular challenge that at some point most husbands are going to have to go through. At the very minimum, you know, it's sort of built into Jewish marriage, certain distances, the harchokes that have to do with just regular cycles. So it's not an unfamiliar concept. Not an unfamiliar concept. Here it's just, again, I'm not trying to minimize it. I'm not trying to say it's no big deal. But the Baisai, this is Yiddishkeit. What do you think Yiddishkeit is? What is it? The bottom line. What is Yiddishkeit? You know what it is? Make no mistake. It's the ability to retain your serenity, your peace of mind, your self-respect, and your class when you're in situations that are highly stressful, including this scenario. Now, if it continues, if it goes on for a prolonged period of time, then clearly there's a deeper issue here. It's not just about corona fears. There's something deeper, and that has to be discussed and has to be dealt with. And there are situations where there is, you know, deep dysfunction in that area of marriage, and sometimes to the point where the marriage is not viable. Well, it's not viable, chas v'shalom, but sometimes that's a situation. But you're talking about a situation that's an exception, that's a particularly stressful time, that's an unusual time, and therefore, you know, dafke at the time where you feel that this would be the most needed, you don't have it. Okay, that's true. That's true. There are going to be times where you're going to have to do without. And don't pout. Don't pout. You know what pouting means? The difference between tantruming and pouting? Children tantrum and children pout. You don't give a toddler what they want, so they tantrum. You don't give a kid who's a little bit older than that, so they don't tantrum, but they pout. I want to tell you something. There's nothing to be gained. No husband ever improved the situation by pouting because he was disappointed in this area. Be a man, be strong, and show that your emotional health ultimately doesn't depend on circumstances that are beyond your control. I mean, again, I'm going to be accused of being impractical. I'm going to be accused of being too demanding. I'm going to be accused of being totally out to lunch in La La Land. I have no idea what normal people think and feel. That's fine. You can accuse me of it, but I'm going to say very clearly. Jews in gulags in Soviet Russia couldn't eat because there was no kosher food. Okay? So that's so different than us. Oh, that's Chassidus. That's Yiddishkeit. And you can live without having the things that a normal person has. Yes, you can. You can. You can. Don't pout. Don't brood. Don't cry about it. Don't become passive aggressive about it. You can be okay without it. You can be a mensch. You can keep your class and your dignity. You can even be smiley and happy and calm, even when you're not getting what you want to be getting. Again, I'll repeat it so there should be no misunderstanding. This is talking about a situation where it's prolonged. It's not a month. It's not 2 months. It's a prolonged situation. And it's a different discussion. Then you're talking about where that whole area of the marriage is deeply, systemically broken, and then something serious has to be done about it. But if you're talking about a situation that's right now, like I believe the questioner was describing, and I really hope that no women are listening on the line, and I hope that women don't get a hold of this, because this is not meant to be used against any husband. I'm speaking very frankly and openly, because I'm only speaking to the men now. Part of being a man is not only that you're going to be okay without it, you're going to keep you cool, you're going to still take out the garbage, you're going to still play with the kids, you're going to still read Hayyamim at family dinner hour, everything that you're supposed to be doing. And if any of those things you don't sound like things that you do, put those on the list of things that you do. And you're going to do all of that stuff with a smile, even though you're not getting your quote-unquote needs met. Why? Because you're a Yid, you're a Chassid, and you can do it, and you're going to be okay. And if it gets really, really, really frustrating for you, then speak to a good friend, a trusted friend, a Rav, a Mashpia, somebody who you can trust, and you can talk to them about it. You can talk about your frustrations. But And now I'm going to add another thing. I think I'm dancing at the edge right now, but I'm going to continue dancing at this edge. Not only are you going to be okay, you're going to be calm, you're going to be nice, you're going to be friendly, even though you're not getting your needs met in this area, but in addition, you are not going to be nichshol chas v'shalom in any things that you could attribute to being under such so-called pressure. Let me spell this out without spelling it out. You think that it's difficult to be a bacher? It's 100 times harder to be a younger man. But that's Yiddish type. That's chassidus. We're not animals. You can control yourself. You can. You can. Now, let me put in the asterisk here. Maybe you'll tell me, no, I can't. Maybe you're going to tell me that this is a constant part of my life, and this is something that I'm doing all the time, and this is an organizing principle of my life. In other words, I schedule my day around opportunities to indulge in this behavior, and if that's the case, okay, that's an addiction, and you have to seek treatment for that in that way. Okay, and that's not applicable to 90% of the people who are listening. If the people listening now are reflective of, you know, general statistics in the world out there, that's not applicable to 90%. 10% of people, roughly, you know, maybe they can relate to that. And then it's not a question about self control. It's more of a it's another issue. I don't want to get into a whole question about addiction, especially about sexual addiction. It's a real thing. And those who have this issue should, there's plenty of help for it, okay? Let me have the discussion to the 90% of people. The 90% of the people who don't have an addiction, they have regular human weakness. I'm going to say to you, you have the ability to be strong in this area. And it is worth being strong in this area. you do not realize the degree of kedusha that you bring to your home by being strong in this area. And I don't want to say it in a negative way. Chas v'shalom. I'm not going to say it in a negative way. I want to say it only in a positive way, but let me say it very clearly. When you have self-control in this area, you bring a tremendous amount of kedusha and blessing in your home, which makes everything healthier, makes your children healthier. Do not think that these things don't have cause and effect. Everything is a cause and effect in everything, even if the effect is spiritual. But spiritual things have very real effects on our lives. Don't think that this is something that's just a compartmentalized issue that's between you and Hashem. This affects more than you. One of the greatest things you can do for your children, to give your children a solid, stable home of positive, clear, clean, healthy emotional energy, is to be a mensch in this area. I promise you, when I tell you, that it's not just that you're winning a personal victory, and you know that you're practicing your scafia. As a husband, as a father, as a head of a household, you are giving such blessing to your children. You're giving such stability, emotional stability to your children by being a mensch in this area. You're going to say, how in the world would this have any effect on anything? And all I'll tell you is either be a Maimon and believe me that it does work this way, or I told you I'm not going to be negative. But if you want to see, go try out the other way. Go experiment, Chas v'Shalom, and see if it has any negative effects that you didn't want when you have struggles in this area. So, sorry that this became such a long discussion, but I think it's very, very, very important. This is not unique to Corona. This is not unique to, you know, quarantine. A husband has to be a spiritual husband. That means your connection to Hashem has to be rock solid. That means to the extent that even when basic things that you are wired as a human being to desire are not in your life right now, and you are able to not only rise above it, but to be positive and to be happy and to be a source of good energy in the home, and there's such blessing. It's such blessing. Don't underestimate the, if you want to invest in one thing to strengthen your home. You know, we did an event, Valtisha, called Strengthen Our Homes. And unfortunately, there were a few hundred women there, so I couldn't speak to the men what I really wanted to say. But now I guess I'll say it. If you want to strengthen your home, if you can pick one thing, it's going to make you, your wife, your kids, and push up the walls of the house healthier and cleaner and clearer. Choose to focus in being strong in this area. And do it like a mensch. Do it with dignity, with class. Don't do it like a poor me, with self-pity. Nothing to pity yourself. It's not a pitiful thing. It's a giver, a kevesh yitzrei. You're a giver. You're a hero. You're a hero. In fact, you're the biggest kind of hero, because you're a hero about something you can't even tell people about. Because if you're a war hero, you tell people, yeah, I threw a grenade and I blew up a tank, all people are impressed. But if you're a hero in this thing, what are you going to do? Who are you going to tell? Right? It would be like the old joke about the rabbi when he had a weakness. He liked to play golf. So one Yom Kippur, he snuck off during the Hafsaka, and he went and he played golf. And he hit his first hole-in-one. First time in his life he hit a hole-in-one. And So the Yetzer Hara asked the Eibishter, he says, Eibishter, you run the world. I can't believe you rewarded this guy's sin. He went golfing on Yom Kippur and you let him hit a hole in one. And the Eibishter says, yeah. But who's he going to tell? What's the whole kunst? You hit a hole in one, you can't even tell anyone. Okay? So this is the greatest heroism there can be. You don't even get to tell anyone. Just between you and Hashem. So, yeah, honestly, if the only thing anybody heard from this entire call is to take strength in this area, then I'm happy that we had the call. Okay, fine. Enough about that.
Okay, I'm going to throw in one more question, and maybe we can do a part two because a lot of important questions came in, but we've been talking for over an hour already, covering a lot of important things. But okay, I'm going to pick up. My wife is so angry, and it's impacting our family. I keep telling her Hashem has a plan and to have Emuna, but she doesn't want to hear that. But isn't that the truth?
It is the truth. It is the truth. Yes. But, you know, being right can be a very dangerous thing. Especially when you're right about something holy. So now you feel really entitled to argue your position because it's right and it's holy and it's good. And by arguing your position, you're just forcing the other person to dig their heels deeper. So what I would say is this, look, none of us like preachers. None of us like people who are holier than thou. And I know the question is not trying to be holier than thou. I'm not accusing them of that, that's for sure. But I'm saying that's how it's coming off. So, you know, when somebody's stressed out and you tell them, oh, don't worry, it's all from Hashem. You know, if they want to hear that, then great, you know. But if that's not what they want to hear right now, and then you realize that's not the message they're open to, you gotta just back off with that stuff. And like I said, being right is very dangerous, especially being right where you have God on your side. So now, you know, it's jihad, it's holy war. I've got on my side. I'm going to really press the point, really, really press the issue. And no, you got to have enough poise to back off. And she doesn't want to hear that right now. She doesn't want to hear religious explanations. So just, you know, reflective listening. Yes, I hear it. It's so stressful. Yes, I hear it. Don't deliver a spiritual message where she doesn't want to hear it. Like the Rebbe said many times, and it's a Maamar Chazal, but you see many times in Igdus, that just like it's a mitzvah to tell somebody something that they'll listen to, it's a mitzvah not to tell them something that they're not ready right now to listen to. So just let that go.
We have a lot of really good questions that came in. Maybe, we, like I said, we'll do a part two. Any final thoughts? Sorry?
Some other stuff. Were they all about that one inyan?
No, totally different questions.
Oh, good, good.
Lots of other aspects of Corona and marriage and husbands. Some were possibly simpler to answer. Do you want to continue now or let's do another night?
Let's do one more.
Okay, let's pick one more. And those who I'm not addressing, if you want, you sent it anonymously, but if you want to add your name, you can send the question again and we can try to address you. Some of these questions are too specific to answer on a general call, so we can't get back to you. I'm feeling stressed, and normally I release my stress by going out with friends or talking to colleagues, of course, working out my schedule with my wife, but now I can't do any of that. Mm-hmm. How can I relieve some stress?
Wow. Yeah. So the extroverts are having a hard time with the quarantine. The introverts are loving it because, by the way, to the person writing this question, I just want you to understand. There are certain people who have a lot less stress right now because every social interaction they have sort of takes something out of them. So, and I will personally identify with that. It's Marishkoina. Marishkoina means that you're an introvert. It doesn't mean depressed. It means an introvert. And so there are some people who have actually more emotional surpluses. They have more energy now because they're not using energy negotiating every little social interaction. So actually, they're energized right now. But I understand that there are people who are the opposite, who are energized through social interaction. Here's what I would say. Right now is a challenging situation. So, you know, everything's a little bit bitty at it. But on the other hand, since it's all Hashgacha Pratis, so, you know, plan B really is plan A. And if this is, in the meantime, the way Hashem wants things to be, then, you know, the bitty of it becomes the lechatchila, and you have to find a way to really, you know, to make this work for yourself. So I would say this. I know that, you know, hanging out with friends has a special, something especially satisfying in that. But remember that the etzim, what we're really talking about is you're an extrovert and you're energized by interacting with other people. Like I'm drained by interacting with other people, me and all the other introverts. So you are energized by interacting with other people. So here's what I'm going to advise. I know it's different, but try to meet those needs at home with your family. You probably, if you're an extrovert already, you probably have a decent rapport with your kids. But maybe you don't. And as good as it is, it could always be as good, as besser, nicht besser. You could always increase that kesher with our children. And adrabah, if you're an extrovert, you're a person who's good at socializing, you're good at hanging out. I know you're good at hanging out, but you like doing it. We only like doing what we're good at. So you like hanging out with people. So you're good at it, you do it, you like it. So try to give your kids more of that. And try to bond with them. I don't have to tell you. You're good at socializing. You know how to do that. So do that with your kids. I told you before, you know, the best thing you can do for your entire family is that, you know, that private, that Indian that we discussed before. This is also the best thing. And there's two best things. Deepen that connection with your kids. Deepen that kesher. Spend some fun time. Bond. You know how to bond. You're an extrovert. You know how to bond. So do that with your kids. And the rewards, not that we do it, you know, out to you. We don't do it for the reward, but I'm telling you, the rewards of investing and bonding with your children there's no greater insurance policy you can take for the health of your children. I'm saying the ruchnius and emotionally, and that they're just happy, healthy, confident children, and they're successful in life. There's nothing you can do more for that than deepen your kesher with them. So I know it's different than hanging out with friends, but hang out with your kids, and you will see amazing pay rise from that.
What if it's more of a newlywed, or the only kid is a baby? And now the only person is the wife.
Yeah. So then put all your focus on her. If that's the situation that Bresh Gocha Pratis you're in. So.
And if she's an introvert?
That's fine. Introverts don't have a problem with.
Yeah.
No, yeah. The problem with an introvert is having to. You have to play by the rules. Like you can't force them to give you eye contact, and you can't force them to say yes, after every single sentence. But once you understand their way of listening, I don't know. It's great because you have one person who wants to talk the whole time, and the other person is fine just to sit there and listen. And they're both loving it. Go ahead, connect.
Right. Okay. So, like I said, there are other questions, but we'll have to put those off for another time. Any final thoughts or wrap up for this call?
You are responsible for Dira Petach Tainim. You never mentioned why do we say Dira Petach Tainim, Lashon Rabim? Why not Lashon Yochid? Elam Hazer Petach Tainim, the lowest world. Why does it Dira Petach Tainim, lowest worlds, plural? So the understanding that the nature of the lowest world is Ribui and his Halkus. And basically that means that every little corner of Elam Hazeh is different than every other corner. And what you have to do to bring Mashiach to one country or to another country, you know, every culture has its own language and its own jokes and its own psychology. And then if you break it down even more granular, every home is just its own little entity within Elam Hazeh. So Dira B'Tach Tenim really means that each house, each family unit, each individual Jewish home is like a whole world unto itself. So you have an incredible responsibility, and I don't mean it to scare you, I mean it to build you up, because if Hashem is asking this of you, it means that you were given the ability to do it, to make your home as beautiful and comfortable of a place to be right now as you can. And if you're comfortable and your wife is comfortable, then the Shechina is comfortable. And that's Dira B'Tach Tenim. And it all happens in your house, in your Dalet Amos. And it's an incredibly powerful, I mean, it's what the whole world was created for. So, you know, take it seriously, but also enjoy it, because it's a beautiful thing that you're doing.
Thank you. We had a lot of callers and a lot of questions. This has been recorded. We will edit it and provide it on our website at adayad.org/past-events. And there's lots of other talks by Rabbi Taub and other presenters in the past. And once again, thank you, Rabbi Taub, and good night to everybody.
Okay, good night. Thank you.
Thank you.